The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The leaked documents also show that Xi Jinping himself, I say again, Xi Jinping himself, directed the crackdown, saying that the Communist Party must put the, quote, organs of dictatorship to work and show absolutely, there's a quote, no mercy in dealing with the Uyghurs and other Muslims. In one speech, President Xi said, and I quote him, the weapons of the People's Democratic Dictatorship must be wielded without any hesitation or wavering. Nor is this hatred of religious and ethnic minorities new. It is the same cruel script that we have seen in Tibet, where the Chinese Communist Party has sought to erase the culture of a proud people.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was a Republican, Chris Smith of New Jersey, and he will be joining me in about 10 minutes to talk a little bit more about what is now unfolding. This is a man who is a great champion of human rights, and we'll bring you up to speed on what's happening with China, the Olympics, and so much more. Speaking of international affairs, there's a ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinians, as you probably haven't heard by now. I'm sure you have. It's gone into effect. I think they had 11 days of fighting, but for some reason, and this is so silly, Hamas is claiming some kind of victory, even though the images coming from the Gaza Strip just show massive destruction, total devastation, and a lot of military experts are saying it really has set back Hamas's military significantly. The terms of the ceasefire have not been made public, but Hamas claims that Israel agreed not to allow police into that Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they would not go forward with the evictions of the Palestinians, you know, living in certain neighborhoods of East Jerusalem. But Israel has denied those claims, and it's not at all clear how long cessation and hostilities are going to stay in place, especially after the fact that more violence erupted on Temple Mount today, which is exactly what brought Hamas into the conflict in the first place. France 24 News, they did a report on the ceasefire and what the world can expect moving forward. Listen.
Shortly before the ceasefire came into force at 2 a.m. local time, double doors were swung open at the White House. The U.S. president was eager to applaud the deal, calling it a genuine opportunity.
I believe the Palestinians and Israelis equally deserve to live safely and securely and to enjoy equal measures of freedom, prosperity, and democracy. My administration will continue our quiet, relentless diplomacy toward that end.
The U.S. State Department has announced that Secretary of State Anthony Blinken will head to the Middle East in the days ahead to meet with Israeli, Palestinian, and regional counterparts. This is a pause in fighting that's also been welcomed by the UN's Secretary General, who's offered his condolences to the victims' loved ones and praised the mediators who helped usher in this calm.
I commend Egypt and Qatar for the efforts carried out in close coordination with the UN to help restore calm to Gaza and Israel. And I call on all sides to observe the ceasefire.
And Egypt, the country which has played such a key role in forging this halt in hostilities, has told the UN General Assembly that Cairo will not only monitor the peace, but, like Washington, will also help with recovery efforts.
The violence is not restricted to Israel. I'm glad the conflict is settling, though. Yesterday in Midtown Manhattan, there was a violent clash that broke out between pro-Israel and pro-Palestinian protesters, and it follows a number of attacks against Jews that have taken place in New York and New Jersey and California. Illinois was another state, Arizona, Florida, even Utah. We've seen this, and I just don't get it, but synagogues have been vandalized. Even worse, Jews have been attacked in broad daylight in the middle of the street with people. I have such trouble even saying this. They were crying the words, "Death to the Jews." One Jewish man was nearly run down by a car full of people waving a Palestinian flag. And they were crying out, "Allah Akbar! Allah Akbar!" And it was a very vivid, ugly display of anti-Semitism. It's just disgusting. It needs to stop. I don't understand the mindset of people. I don't understand this hatred that manifests this way. Let's continue to pray. Let's pray for peace. Let's hopefully get beyond this. I mean, we're seeing here now in the streets of our own country. You know, the CDC, that vaccinated people, is saying, hey, if you're vaccinated, you know, you can go without your mask. I went to mass earlier today. I don't think a person in the church had a mask on. I was surprised. And stores are the same way around here. People are abandoning the mask. And a lot of businesses are in a dilemma. They're trying to figure out how to enforce the mask mandates. A lot of businesses, especially retailers, have simply, you know, gone to putting signs up saying, hey, we recommend you wear your mask. They let it go at that. But there's one state in our union, all right, the state of Oregon. Governor there, Kate Brown, she's not going to rely on the honor system. She's telling businesses, she's telling workplaces, she's even telling houses of worship. If you're going to allow vaccinated people to go without masks, those people are going to have to prove, they're going to provide proof that they've been vaccinated. KTVZ-TV in Oregon will tell you more about what's now required.
It's okay for people fully vaccinated against COVID-19 to take off their masks indoors, as long as businesses, churches, and other establishments check. That word came today from the Oregon Health Authority. In locations where vaccination status is not verified, masks are still required. Businesses can set more restrictive policies if they choose. The state also announced masks are no longer needed for anyone outside unless in a crowded area or a large gathering.
Businesses are really worried about checking people's vaccination ID. It's very uncomfortable for them to do. I think if there is one thing that businesses would ask the public is to be cooperative, to be gracious, and to be understanding about the position that businesses are in when they ask you to be safe.
In Oregon, masks are still required on public transportation, in schools, hospitals, clinics, homeless shelters, long-term care facilities, and jails or prisons.
I don't know what you're seeing. But I think more and more people are losing the mask. And who knows, you may have to have an app on your phone to prove you've been vaccinated for some sort of vaccination card. We'll see how this plays out. Utah taking a stand, though. That, of course, is not appealing to a lot of business owners who don't want to be enforcers. They don't want to get into confrontations. They don't want to hurt their business, right? And I know priests and pastors aren't going to want to do that either. And the idea, you know, you now have to show papers, you know, in order to get into a public place of accommodation. I don't think that's what American people want either. So we'll have to see how that, as I said, plays out. Let me know. I'll stay on top of it and keep you up to speed. On another note, last year, the Summer Olympics were scheduled to take place in Tokyo, and those got postponed because of COVID-19. And have been scheduled for this July. The corresponding Winter Olympics are scheduled to take place in February. And next year, none other than Beijing, China. And here's the deal with this, right? It's causing problems for people on a number of different levels. First, we have a worldwide pandemic, right? And a lot of people believe it may have originated in a lab in Wuhan, China. We'll see what happens, you know, and what the evidence and research ultimately reveals. You've got the Chinese government that really could have helped to contain the spread of this if they had been more transparent, more open. But they really didn't do anything about it when it first happened. Then you've got genocide. And we've been talking about this for a long time. In fact, we'll be joined by the prime minister a little bit later. We're going to talk about what's happening with the Uyghurs. But the atrocities that are taking place right now against the Uyghur population in the western province of Xinjiang where millions of people have been put in prison camps. They've been deported because the Chinese government supposedly wants to keep any possibilities for terrorism under control. Then you have the fact that, you know, there's active religious persecution, particularly against Christians and especially against Catholics going on, you know, with churches being destroyed and bishops disappearing, the agreement with the Vatican being totally ignored, and the list goes on. So despite all this, the International Olympic Committee, they want to keep the Winter Games in China. And I'll tell you what, that's irksome to say the least. Especially to Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. He held a hearing the other day. It was entitled China Genocide and the Olympics. where testimony was given about what impact this event would have for China. And I'm grateful for his time. Congressman Smith joins me today. Hey, always a delight to have you. Welcome back. And thank you for what you're doing, Congressman.
Drew, thank you so very much. I really enjoy your show and for the great witness you bear and the news that you get out that doesn't get necessarily getting out from other places. So thank you so much for that.
You know, I appreciate that. I do. I've been covering the plight of the Uyghurs for several months. I mean, for probably more than that. It's horrific. You know, this program against the Uyghurs is ongoing. It seems to... seems that some of our large corporations are actually taking advantage of what the Chinese are doing and rounding them up, putting them in labor camps. I want to be careful about saying that, but you probably would know better than I. Should we be paying closer attention to, you know, any complicity the U.S. or U.S. corporations are, you know, have in dealing with the Uyghurs and what's happening over there?
Drew, there's no doubt about that. Unfortunately, you know, I go way back with the whole idea of Gulag made labor or slave labor. Yeah. Back in the early 1900s, you know, the Clinton administration had rolled out this absolutely bogus idea of ensuring that goods weren't coming from slave labor. It was called an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding. And it wasn't worth the paper it was printed on because if we suspected something, we would tell the Chinese authorities who would then inspect. And we got back bogus answers, obviously, because we're telling the people who are actually doing the cruelty to look into it. You know, I raised that for years, that a lot of what ends up on our shelves is coming from forced labor. And I wrote the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, and forced labor and sex labor are the two focuses of that. And China, like no other country on the face of the earth, uses forced labor. Fast forward to this genocide against the Uyghurs, predominantly Muslim, Kazakhs as well, but mostly Uyghurs. And back in 2013, 2014, dictator Xi Jinping began this all-out effort that was not visible at first, because it is a closed society, of rounding up people, putting them into concentration camps, and then forcing them to make goods that primarily are exported. And so there is a bill that I'm pushing very hard that would say anything coming out of Xinjiang, for example, that's the area in question, can't come to the United States unless the exporter can prove beyond any reasonable doubt to our customs officials that it was not made with slave labor. So it's a super terrible, horrible problem. And you got everybody, not everybody, a whole lot of people looking the other way.
You are, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but my understanding is you were actually targeted by the Chinese government for sanctions because of your outspoken opposition to their program. I mean, has that impacted you at all? What happened?
Well, I've been briefed by the FBI. They've told me to be very, very mindful of what they can do. I was barred after 2008 when I went over there right before the Olympics and left before they began because there was no reason why Beijing should have had the Summer Olympics in 2008. Yep. They rounded up all the dissidents, put them out of contact or any kind of proximity to the journalists who were in town, and tortured many of them. what kind of Olympic spirit is that? And so after that, I was barred from ever getting a visa. And I did go once, but it was it was very, very circumvented in terms of what I was able to do. But then I got put on their enemies list a little over a year ago. It was announced in one of their largest publication in China. And so I've been briefed to be very mindful of, you know, a lot of things vis-a-vis the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, they are brutal. Yeah. They go after their own people. They're not their people. As a matter of fact, the Chinese people deserve better than this horrible dictatorship. But what they do in terms of torture, and I've had hearings on all of it, forced abortion, forced sterilization, the whole idea of attacking Christians and the Catholic underground church and all people of faith, Xi Jinping has a new policy called synodization. Synodization means that everything faith-based has to comport with communist ideology as he sees it. And it's cruel. It's they got surveillance in all of the officially recognized churches, and there aren't many of them. And again, you can count on when you're arrested, you're going to be beaten and probably tortured for a very long time.
Wow. It makes me not ever want to travel there. Horrific. But you know, yeah, see, here's the problem I have understanding then why. You know, we know very clearly. It's been reported. You've heard testimony. I mean, you know what's going on in China. Why are we supporting the Olympics there? I mean, you want the Olympics moved to another city. I certainly agree with you on that. Yeah. But how practical is that at this particular point in time? It's what, less than a year away from the event?
Well, it's totally practical because we have something that is right in line with what the Nazis were doing, and that is a genocide.
Amen.
Now, Dachau was already up and running before the 1936 Olympics, but they, in a way, didn't have the same media that we have, the same exposure of what's going on. It shouldn't have been held in Nazi Germany, but frankly, it was. And now we have a deja vu all over again with this Olympics. And they didn't learn from the 08 Olympics, which I and others very, very bitterly said, do not hold it there. I mean, and now it's done to the Hong Kong, people of Hong Kong, crushing their human rights. They made solemn promises that were going to last 50 years when they got it back from the UK. There's treaty obligations, the basic law that looks like our own, Bill of Rights. And all of it has been completely trashed. And all the great people that, like Joshua Wong, have been thrown into prison. That plus the terrible things to Tibet, and now an actual bona fide genocide, the destruction of a people in whole or in part. They are completely displacing the Uyghur culture, stealing their kids and putting them into non-Uyghur households, putting the use of torture, 1 to 3 million people in these forced labor camps. And they're using forced abortions to bring down and sterilization the number of people. And it's dropped by such numbers because they're not having children, because this terrible dictatorship, Chinese Communist Party, is doing it. I don't know how, honestly, an Olympics can be held in a city with a government that is doing these things and doing it so brazenly. Yeah. I mean, they don't allow any of us. I'd go to Xinjiang tomorrow if I could.
Right.
I couldn't even get into Beijing now if I wanted to, because I'm barred from travel by this despicable government. Again, we got to stand with solidarity with the people who are being victimized and not with the victimizer. And that's what we're doing by going along with this, and that's what the International Olympic Committee. You know, interesting enough, they didn't win it by much in 2015 when they were awarded the Olympics. And I was all against it then, too. It was 44-40. And Kazakhstan was the other main competitor. They could postpone this. If a COVID pandemic can postpone it, surely Tokyo, and I'm glad those games are going forward, you could postpone and find a new venue for a genocide-committing government, which is Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, but my guest today is Congressman Chris Smith. He hails from New Jersey. And just a final thought on the Olympics here. The Chinese were awarded it, I think, in 2008. That was 13 years ago. Have things changed in those 13 years, that decade and a half? Has it gotten progressively worse? Was it always like this?
Great question, Drew. It has gotten much worse. They actually had, as I said, the Summer Olympics in 08, and I was there right before it with Congressman Frank Wolf. We brought prisoners lists with us. We held press conferences. And we were basically hated for it. That's when I was told, you're not coming back to Beijing anytime soon. But that said, in 2015, when the IOC, International Olympic Committee, said, yep, we're going to pick now the Winter Olympics, because that was summer, of course, for Beijing in 2022, it was like, are you kidding me? How could you be? They were told, we're told by a press release, that the IOC got assurances on human rights. I can't find out, nor can anyone else, what those assurances are. I invited them, the IOC, and anybody from the American Olympic Committee to my hearing on Tuesday. They didn't show. They sent us a nothing burger statement. Because I want to ask them, what assurances did you get? And what happens when those assurances, if there are any, are not adhered to? But since then, we have become aware of what they've done to Hong Kong, of course, which is really started in 2014. And then what they have been doing since about that time when Xi Jinping, the dictator, launched, and it's all him. You know, as I think more and more people know, we've got the documents that show clearly, he ordered this, he said, show no mercy to any of these people. So you kill them, torture them, forcibly abort them, and if they become just like Xi Jinping wants them to be, maybe they'll leave him alone. It is genocide. They're trying to destroy this entire group of people.
So what can we do? There's a lot of people who listen, and every time I deal with this issue of this genocide, people are passionate. They call their senators and their congresspeople. What can the listeners across the nation do as they're hearing you right now to help make a difference?
Well, specifically on the Olympics, because what happens if the Chinese government succeeds and these are held and all those festivities occur and all this false image? And that's one of the things that Xi Jinping himself said, that he wants to, advance Chinese Communist Party governance model, the new order of the world. Mm-hmm. They do have, obviously, hegemony in the area. We know that without any doubt. But I think they have designs on much of the world. And they're trying to tell everybody, not America, not Western democracies, but China, and follow their model. Yeah. And they've been doing that for some time. What they can do is to call their congressmen and senators and say, change the venue, go somewhere else, even if it has to be postponed. It's an inconvenience, but to enable a dictatorship they're also talking about marketing their brands. Our companies have shamelessly given over to promoting these Olympics, and I am going to invite them to a second hearing. Because they're just going along with all of this to make money and to keep their access in the country. And no one knows, what threats they've received or whether or not they're just willing and useful idiots, as was said by a previous communist leader. But I find it appalling that they would be willing to aid and abet a genocide.
Yeah.
So change the venue, new place, new city, or boycott.
Yeah, I'm going to give everyone the Capitol switchboard in a moment, and you can call, your elected official. The IOC, I always wonder, should they make it possible that if a country's awarded the games and then becomes a human rights mess like we're seeing right now, that they will withdraw the games and give them to someone else? I think that's just common sense. Speaker Pelosi, what did she have to say about all this as well? I'm curious.
Well, she actually came to my hearing, and she called for a diplomatic boycott, which would prevent people in governments from going over, but not the team and not people who want to go and just pay money and watch. I think that when juxtaposed, put side by side with a genocide, is absolutely not strong enough. It undermines our, the moral suasion of saying you can't simultaneously hold an Olympic Games and commit a genocide.
You're right.
You just can't do it.
You're right.
You know how demoralizing that is to the people in the gulags and in the prisons as they're being tortured. When they hear about everybody singing the praises of Xi Jinping and his party, it politicizes all of this. Is politicizing the games because that's what Xi Jinping wants to do with it all. It's all for his. It's not about the athletes.
Yep.
So find another venue. There are many other viable places they can go. Do that. But it's got to be strong. This weakness. Look at the way WHO and Tedros, who's the director general of the WHO, cowered under the pressure of the Chinese Communist Party and Xi Jinping in falsifying the entire narrative about the COVID-19. I mean, people got sick and died. 26,000 died in my state of New Jersey alone. And all the business losses and financial hardships because of their duplicity and lying and that should be an additional. That should be enough, frankly, to say not there now. You guys have misled the world. You ought to be held to account. But
the
overriding reason right now is genocide. The Holocaust was a genocide. The Armenian destruction of the Armenian people was a genocide. There have been genocides that have occurred in Sudan. This is a genocide. Mass slaughter trying to destroy a people in whole or in part.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, it's the entirety of the nation to try to destroy.
Congressman Smith, first of all, I am so glad you remain in office. The people of New Jersey are very blessed to have you. And I hope they'll get behind you, continue to support your efforts. And thank you for defending the most vulnerable, those who are now on the other end of this genocide. That was Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. Say a prayer for him. Call your congressperson. In fact, a little bit later in the show today, I'm going to share with you an interview with the prime minister who will share more on the Uyghur genocide. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The price of cryptocurrencies took a dive recently, with Bitcoin leading in the declines. Investors had flocked to crypto after wild swings in markets worldwide, but the price of Bitcoin rather tumbled on Wednesday, falling as low as $30,000. That's less than half of what it was worth at its all-time high in April, when the digital currency soared to over $63,000.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I don't know if you've been following Bitcoin, investing in Bitcoin, using Bitcoin. Man, what a ride, huh? That report came from CBS Money Watch. We'll talk more about it. I always marveled at the incredible climb that Bitcoin had. In fact, I had a guest on the program, Bill. If you're listening, Bill Oliveri, he came on to talk about Bitcoin. This was years ago. And he said to me, he says, look, I'll send you a wallet. I'll give you a couple Bitcoin. I'll give you some Bitcoin and, you know, start to invest in it. Right. Well, I wish I did, because I think Bitcoin back then was like $5,000 a Bitcoin, or maybe it was less. Probably was even less back then. And that, as you know, it went up to $60,000. My daughter knows a 23-year-old kid who just bought a $400,000 home, because he invested like $1,000 to Bitcoin, and he sold it when it was up there. So he made a ton. Hey, but those are, that's like winning the lottery, those types of stories. But we'll be talking about Bitcoin with Peter Grandage coming up and giving you a look at what's happening in the economy and the markets and so much more. I don't know if you follow the markets. Maybe you got a 401k or a 403b. They've been bad this week. Markets continue to be pummeled by the bad news of coming inflation, of a far higher inflation rate. And we've regained some of what we lost over the last 2 weeks. But overall, I think the market's still about 500 points to make up. So we'll see what happens. I hope we get this right. To be honest with you, I am a little concerned about the future of the economy, just slightly. And I'll tell you why coming up in a minute. But, I hope, and please pray for Joe Biden and for this administration, that they make the right decisions. All right. We have to pray. Bad decisions are going to cost the country. It's going to cost you. And it's not just stocks. Like I said, cryptocurrency to me is fascinating. It's taken a huge beating. Elon Musk is apparently not enamored with the currency. I was surprised by that. I thought he would be behind it. And he was a big supporter of cryptocurrency, but he's decided not to allow it to be used to buy Teslas. Then the Chinese government, here's the big player. Chinese government issued a warning to its banks that the currency is risky and that they should avoid anything to do with it. And that sent investors fleeing, right? They went fleeing from it. And, it lost a lot of value as a result of that. But all this comes after, just a really bad labor market report last week showing that, only 200,000 jobs were added versus an expectation for nearly 1 million. And it comes after the inflation report, which I think really has a lot of people worried, concerned, trepidatious. Americans are really starting to feel this in their pocketbooks as they go shopping. I've got young kids, right? I mean, they're not young. They're young adults now, and they're in their 20s. But I think about what food costs. You take a look at food and how much the cost of living for, people on perhaps a limited income might be. Right now, Americans are somewhat flush. You might have a lot of cash still after your tax refunds, after your government payouts, but that's not going to last that long. So what does the future hold? We're going to take a look at that with Peter Grandage coming up. But one final thing here, one final note. Apparently, a lot of investors are borrowing money in order to purchase stocks. And I do want Peter's take on this. The idea, of course, is that the value of the stocks they buy, they're only going to go up, and then they can pay off the loan and they can make a profit. That's really, really risky, right? So we'll talk about that as well. Be careful if you're out there doing that. I'm joined right now by the former Wall Street whiz kid. Peter's got a great story. If you're new to the program, this guy became a millionaire a couple times over, lost his money, made his money, converted to the Catholic faith, and all this without even a high school diploma, became famous on Wall Street, did a lot of television, a lot of the financial shows, and he wrote a book. Initially, it was called, you know, Confessions of the Wall Street Whiz Kid, and he changed that to Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid, where he tells really his incredible journey of how his Catholic faith led him to real Christian conversion. And it's a good read. If you want to check it out, we'll get you the website. I hope you'll follow Peter, too. Check him out. Tap into his genius and expertise. You can learn more about him at petergrandich.com. petergrandich.com. He provides guidance on matters of finance through his company, Peter Grandich & Company. Dealt with a lot of athletes and dealt with a lot of that type of investing for a while. But he gives me his time about twice a month, and it's really great to always tap into his expertise to see where we're going and how to evaluate what's unfolding before us. Peter, thanks for being here. Good to have you on the air. And I think your congressman was just on me. Congressman Chris Smith is from New Jersey. Is he a friend of yours? Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. And I didn't know Chris was going to be on. And it's ironic because I always like to joke when he's around is it's because of him I can't throw the entire Congress under the bus. He's just a phenomenal guy. He's only one of two politicians that I've ever supported in any significant manner. He's a lover of the Catholic Christian faith. He's the greatest defender of life. He has led for years in this area, Catholic Men's for Christ rallies and anything to do with abortion and what have you. But he's such a hard worker. You wonder why he would be in there. People don't know what Chris has had to go through. You know, we had a congressman in southern New Jersey that converted to the Republican Party during the Trump, but he's really the lone Republican left in New Jersey. And in his last two elections, he has been so attacked by the left. I mean, physically, they literally had to put a policeman inside his office. And one of the reasons I know it, how what a small world is, the girl who originally wrote my book, Joe Schloeder, is one of his assistants, and has been for quite a while. And let me just tell you, I listened to that interview, and here's a guy later in his life who's just what a congressman should be. I mean, that's what Chris Smith is, and it was just so great, and I can just tell you he takes those things so seriously. You're never going to hear stories about Chris milking his Congress ways and making millions like we just heard another New Jersey Democrat made millions during the pandemic, even though he claimed people shouldn't be doing that. He's just a very, very special blessing from God, and I got to tell you something. I would urge people to help the cause that he spoke of, and we are very, very blessed in where I live to have Chris as our congressman.
Yeah, for as long as he's been coming on my broadcast here, I mean, he's always been a great champion of life on so many different levels. And unfortunately, we live in a culture today where if something's out of sight, it happens to be out of mind, and the genocide that's taking place amongst the Uyghur people is atrocious, and to have him on the front lines, not only calling for action, calling China out on it, you know, holding our corporations accountable, but bringing this to the floor of Congress. I mean, I'm grateful for him, and you're blessed to have him. I'm glad you're a good friend of his. It's a small world, isn't it, Peter? It's amazing. Who knows who?
Yeah, really is. And you know, I've never really, you know, I was told when I started in the business almost 40 years ago, don't talk about politics, religion, and other men's wives. And I do a lot of the politics and religion, but Chris is just a really, really special guy, and it was exciting, you know, to hear him on. And even at his late stage, I don't know how many years, decades, he's been a congressman, and you know, you're not going to find dirt on him. I mean, you're going to find people that write from the side because they disagree with his views, but he's just really what congressmen were supposed to be, and he's really the poster child for what a good Catholic Christian man in politics is supposed to do. And we just adore him, and I was so happy to hear him.
So what were the three things? You should never talk politics, religion. Did you say other men's wives?
Other men's wives. That was kind of the joke one that the guy
I never heard that before.
yeah, that was the things that I was told. But you know me,
makes sense.
I don't hold back on the politics and the religion part.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, Peter, I'm always grateful for you, too. You're another one of my my favorites. Always appreciate your perspective. You're able to bring a God perspective to finance and how we should look at these things and where we're going. I want to talk Bitcoin, but before I get there, I just want to talk inflation for a second, if we can. I saw what happened in Venezuela, you know, when inflation got out of control and the money became worthless. And we've seen it, you know, with communism and all these communist countries and a lot of other places where this gone has happened, Germany, et cetera, after the war. I don't think America is going to see that. I think we're a robust nation and economy, but I don't want to be Pollyannish either. I mean, what do you see happening in the not too distant future? And the reason I'm saying this, I'm concerned about how much money is just being written and printed. I mean, the Biden administration just keeps giving money out. You know, we're talking trillions of dollars. Your thoughts, if you could address the issue of inflation, how these policies impact it, but then secondarily, you know, how it may impact those who are listening here.
Well, first of all, you and I have long discussed, you know, my single biggest pet peeve of what's wrong with our economy, and that is the uncontrollable amount of issuing of debt, whether it's on the federal level, state level, corporate level, or personal level. And we've talked, and just in the time that I've been blessed to be on Relevant Radio, we've seen the country's debt double. And you know we're going to be over $30 trillion here, and I always tell people that doesn't include the biggest cost that we don't actually carry on the books, which if we were a business we'd have to, and that is the future payment of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which would take us well over $70 trillion in really debt, and that money's not sitting somewheres where they're just going to take it out of savings to pay us. So that's a real hard debt, but the U.S. government, because they get to say how they keep their books, as a business, we would have to fund an unfunded liability. They don't have to. So let's just look at the hard debt now, $30 trillion. So in 2019 was the last real economic year we had before the pandemic, and we did about $3.5 trillion in tax revenue. That's what the government took in. That's how it's able to conduct itself through through tax revenues. Our interest payments was $440 billion, or somewhere between 12 or 14% of what we take in. With inflation coming back, and I'll address that in a moment, it doesn't have to come back a lot to see interest rates back at 4 or 5%. After all, Drew, you're not quite as old as me, but I'll never forget when Mary and I went to look for our first homes in the early 80s, and the lady said, hey, you know, I can really get you a 15% interest rate. You know, wow. We think that, you know, listen, CDs were 20%. When I started in the business, and people didn't want to buy it. But that, look, was then, this is now. But it's not going to take that much from a 1% to 2% environment to go back to a 3%, 4%, or 5% environment. I agree with you. We're not going to Venezuela. We're not going to 15% or 20% interest, certainly not anything in the conceivable future. But going back realistically to a 4% or 5% interest rate is not inconceivable, and I think it's legitimate because of what's about to happen with inflation and all. Yeah. So let's just say we're at 5% and we're at the $30 trillion. He doesn't even put out more debt.
Right.
That's $1.5 trillion in interest expense, or almost half of what we made in 2019 just to pay the interest. Not a dollar's worth for defense, not a dollar's worth for anything else. So this is what I've always told you is the 8,000, which is now the 8 million pound gorilla in the room, is the uncontrollable increasing of debt, and we've talked about the kicking of the can and all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the inflation part is being caused from two main ways. One, you can't keep printing trillions of listen, Drew, I never envisioned, I'm 38 years in this, that we would talk about trillion anything, trillion budget deficits, tens of trillions in debt. It was inconceivable. When I started in the business, we were the world's largest creditor nation. So the inflation factor comes simply because of so much money creation. But then the other factor is that during the pandemic, what people didn't recognize, because we was, you know, we so caught up here in that we could die if we step outside or if we don't wear a mask and all this stuff, is there was a great let-up of building of products. And because of that, and now people are just getting back to returning to some organizational. We have a shortage worldwide in across the board. And what people don't realize is this didn't just happen last month. Talk to anybody in really any industry, and they'll tell you whatever their costs have been, they've been rising for well over a year and well past the 1 or 2% that the Fed, you know, reports and all that type of stuff. So the combination of those things and the fear is always more than the actual inflation, because what happens and what happened in South America where you brought in what we used to call the third world countries is once people perceive prices are going to increase, they actually speed up and spend more and buy stuff because they think it's going to go up, and that actually feeds, you know, for things to go up more and more. And we saw that in the 70s, and people don't realize this. Well, the economy has to be real strong. No, it doesn't. We had a couple of recessions during the 70s, but we saw something called stagflation. And we got to the point where if Volcker didn't slip on the brakes, we would have come a third world nation. So there's a lot of things out there, and, you know, it takes you back to, you know, why, you know, I've taken such a bearish stance on the stock market. And this, and the problem now is, back then it was just an economic problem, but now our social and political issues are as severe, if not worse. So the combination of all of it, Drew, just makes me that live chicken versus dead duck. And I don't see any other way to approach it, at least from, you know, the eyes that I've had for 38 years and around, you know, around Wall Street.
And my guest is Peter Grandage. I have to take a short pause, Peter. When we come back, if you want, I'll take a few of your calls. You can get in now at 888-914-9149. Taking a look at the market, Bitcoin, and more. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your life, your money, connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Money!
All right, let's talk crypto. Huh? Very confusing. To be honest, I'm pretty good at getting things. You know, I can dive into them, unpack them, study them, kind of comprehend them. This whole blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, it's not backed by gold. It's not. Honestly, I still have trouble understanding crypto. I mean, you've got Bitcoin, you got Dogecoin, you got all these different coins, right? Ethereum, et cetera. That's another one that took, I think, a dip. Lots of different coins that are out there. Bitcoin was insane. I was almost hitting myself saying, oh, I should have, man, when the Bitcoin was at 5,000 and everybody was saying get it and it went up to 60,000. Could you imagine if you had some Bitcoin? Oh my gosh, how much would that have been worth? But what happened? It dropped like a rock, right? A lot of news, China saying, hey, stay away from it, telling their banks, Elon Musk is not going to take it. I mean, there's this exodus from Bitcoin. It lost 30% of its value, like $30,000, like in a heartbeat. That's how fast it went. My guest today, Peter Grandage, when it hit 60,000, he was on the air with me. I remember this. I said to him, you know, well, Peter, let's talk Bitcoin, right? Well, it's because it was just going through the roof, right? He told everybody to sell everything you have. Peter, it's good to have you back. And by the way, before you respond, because I want to get your take on why you made that prediction, please check Peter out at petergrandage.com. It's petergrandage.com. Sign up for his newsletter and tap into his expertise. He's got a great company that guides you on financial matters. That's Peter Grandage and Company as well. But Peter, you called it right again, this time with Bitcoin. I wasn't sure whether you were right about this because, man, everybody was getting behind it. You know, there were banks and corporations and everybody was going to start using it, and yet you told everyone to sell. What happened? Why? What did you see?
Well, first of all, the technology block technology is here to stay. Blockchain technology is here to stay. It's like the infancy of the internet. Everybody got in. All sorts of things were created. There was an inevitable shakeout, is what I believe is going to come. But probably 5 or 10 years from now, some of the companies we know now will not only be survivors, but they'll be much, much bigger. So I'm not against blockchain technology or cryptocurrency. But my concern was, and I had not spoken until the insanity of where it got to when it was closer to 65,000. And I had never said to anybody, I said, listen, you made money, you bought it at 1,000, too, it was at 20. Hey, listen, take a little something off the table and all. But when we got to that level and some of the things that were said, particularly by one man, I just decided to go out and to everybody I knew and say, listen, I think this is coming, the pet rock of the 21st century. That was the line that I used. Mm-hmm. You have these gains, please take it all off the table. This thing can really come back hard. Well, I hadn't been that abused since going to an Eagles game wearing a Giants jersey. Okay, you know, it was really bad. I did a few interviews in secular media. The quotes are out there. You can see what people commented when they put it up on YouTube. And it just played into what I felt, that it became such a cult and such a mania that I felt it had to happen. And the main argument that I gave, which is playing out now in front of our eyes, was, hey, listen, folks, it's all great. We haven't seen anybody in any position of government or monetary support Bitcoin. In fact, we're hearing them all be negative, that the European Central Bank president, she came out against it. The Bank of International Settlements came out of it. The governor of the Bank of England came out of it. China's a rehashed stuff, but they've been against it. Then India, until this pandemic caught them in a bad way, was about to make it illegal. And I'm telling people, I said, listen, you haven't heard from the United States yet either. This is, it's not in their best interest to see the Bitcoin of the world go forward. But people were so believed that Bitcoin was what snake oil once was. It cures everything. It fixes everything. It doesn't hurt. But today, it's ironic. I wrote this morning, long before the news of China again today, it was put out early this morning, about this man who's really the godfather of Bitcoin. His name is Michael Saylor. And I played two videos that he's recorded. And he literally states to people, mortgage your house, take the money you have in your companies, and put it all in Bitcoin. In fact, don't even buy another cryptocurrency, just buy Bitcoin. And what I was telling people is, you have to understand, if he was in the financial service business, he should be thrown out the door. You can't tell people to put everything and mortgage, like you said earlier, about people borrowing to go into the stock market. He's telling people to borrow to buy Bitcoin at, you know, what, $50,000, $60,000. So all the earmarks of a strong, overhyped product was there, and now we're going to see the coming to back to earth of it. I still think it can go a lot lower. I still think if people that have gains, you know, I think it can go a lot lower before it goes higher. And I don't think Bitcoin is going to be one of those survivors that I spoke about. And so, you know, there is a possibility that Bitcoin will not be worth a lot, you know, in maybe the next year or two. And again, please, I'll just tell you now, if you have any Bitcoin maniacs, they'll be sending me emails right now, because it reminds me so much of the cults that we used to see, you know, with the Jim Jones and things of that nature. And I still think it has a lot of downside risk. And I just don't think, even though it should have been always treated as a speculation, and Drew, I always tell you, the word speculation was created by Wall Street, so they don't have to use the word which really describes what you're doing, and that's gambling. And so speculation or gambling, I don't think for 99% of the people, even though it's so-called pullback, it's worth gambling on at this point in time.
All right. So, we have a couple of minutes, Peter. Let's grab a call or two. If you want to get in, 888-914-9149. Joanne. Okay, no, I won't take that call. Sorry about that. There was a person asking about this. My producer's telling me the signal's really bad, but I do want to get your take on it. They were asking about AMC and GameStop. Your thoughts on that, and then maybe I'll take another call or two.
Again, these are stocks that are, it's a unique thing now, how the internet has opened up the ability to promote and, in a sense, hype situations and groups of people. And my only concern there is, and I get called, you know, an old boomer, you're out of touch, and all the other things that people say, I still believe experience is worth a lot of money. And there are a lot of people that are playing these things that might have been doing this for a whole year. And maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the biggest mathematical problem they faced was their algebra test. So I just got to tell you, Drew, I just think this whole gambling speculative nature that the market had come to, all these things are coming together in a perfect storm at a time where the Federal Reserve in this last couple of days, including today, has basically given its strongest hint that it's going to start emptying out the Kool-Aid. And with that in mind and all these other things, I would just tell you, if you haven't played those things by now, I just think it's better to err on the side of caution.
Peter, just on a personal note, the housing market, I see people selling homes like crazy right now. I don't know whether you can speak to this or not. It's crazy. And people are putting a home up and people are bidding. There's bidding wars on a lot of people's houses. What's driving that right now, and how long do you think the market's going to stay that hot?
You know, people are buying homes as is. They're not, they're foregoing inspections.
I mean,
again, it's just one of the many, many cycles that we'll look back, and historians will go, look at these are all the things that were happening at a time before the Great Bust. Kind of like the 1920s, where everybody threw risk completely out the door. No one thought it was happy days here again, it could last forever, and then something always happens. So the housing, again, is that there weren't a lot of building like there used to be, and people are, you know, leaving, you know, in the cities and want to get in there. And it's all, listen, I've advised people, Drew, I'll end on this. I told people I've never recommended a serious cash position in, I don't know, 20-something years. But about 3 weeks ago, that's when I told people, I'm building a big position in cash. And if you want to follow it, I err on the side of caution, because I think assets are going to be 20, 30, 40% lower across the board in the next year or two. So I'm a bear. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, well, Peter, thank you. I always appreciate your perspective and your God perspective on a lot of this, too. I wish we had a little bit more time, but enjoy your weekend, okay, brother? Always good to talk with you.
God bless.
God bless you. That's Peter Grandage. Check him out, petergrandage.com. Bookmark that, learn a little bit more about him. And if you enjoyed the conversation, you can get more. He has, a newsletter that goes out. You can register for that as well. Or just give him a call. I'll be back. We'll pray the chaplet right after this.
It's overwhelming at times. Some of us maybe feel like it's the end of the world as we know it. But we have a God who knows his way out of the tomb. We always have to remember that.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media. Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.